I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me. And I'm a little bit nervous in this audience as a chemist, but perhaps I should console myself that we are the chemists who are making the materials that you physicists are measuring and theorizing about. So that should give me a little confidence. So I am speaking about these layered nickelates, nickel plus one and nickel two plus, which are isoelectronic D8-D9 with the high temperature superconducting cuprates. And although I am talking, most of the work that I'm talking about was done by a postdoc, Viktor Poltavets, who is now an assistant professor at Michigan State. The neutron diffraction was done by Takashi Agami. Gabby Cotliar helped with the DFT calculations that I will be talking about. And Nick Kuro is an excellent solid state NMR spectroscopist whose data I'm going to talk about as well. So I shouldn't, why nickel plus one, nickel two plus? Perhaps a reasonable question, but why nickel compounds is rhetoric because nickel is near copper. And the question we should ask is why haven't we found superconductivity in nickelate compounds? As it says up there, nickel plus, nickel two plus have the same electronic configuration as Cu2 plus, Cu3 plus in the superconducting cuprates. And so these compounds are model systems for superconducting model nickelates for superconductivity. And the properties, moreover, of Ni plus one and Ni2 plus nickelates are unknown. So these are the structures that one observes in the high temperature superconducting cuprates. You can see that primarily we have octahedra, square pyramidal, and square planar structural units. And why nickelates with infinite Ni2O layers are particularly favorable? Because in octahedral coordination of nickel 2 plus, nickel 2 plus in octahedral coordination 3D8 is high spin, and copper 3 plus 3D8 in the cuprates is as equal to zero or low spin. So we need the square planar NiO2 layers to get the proper electronic configuration, the proper spin state. So how to increase the crystal field splitting? Change the ligands, change the oxidation state. That's not easily done. Use coordination polyhedra with the largest crystal field splitting. And this can be achieved. You can see that nickel 2 plus is S1 in octahedral coordination. Even if we distort the octahedra to tetragonal symmetry, it's still S1. And we have to go to square planar coordination where the dxy, dx square minus y square is sufficiently separated so that we get nickel 2 plus 3d8 as S equal to 0 or in the low spin state. So in square planar coordination, if we have nickel plus 1, 3d9, s1/2, and nickel 2 plus 3d8, s equal to 0, then we achieve, as predicted by Anisimov and Rice in that paper, we can achieve perhaps high temperature superconductivity in nickelates in analogy with the cuprates, where we have planes of S1/2 nickel plus 1, lightly doped with mobile low spin nickel 2 plus S equal to 0. So here are the few nickel plus 1, nickel 2 plus compound with infinite layer NiO2 planes. Reduction of these rare earth perovskites by Crespin and Hayward, one by hydrogen in some very special setup, not easily done. achieve the reduction of rare earth nickelate perovskite to this infinitely rare earth nickel compound, nickelate, in which you can see nickel is plus one. So there are very few papers that discuss this. They have achieved the reduction, but nothing is known about the compound is not pure. This is a very difficult reaction. And what we're trying in my lab to do now is to get pure compounds of this and then to dope them. But these are very difficult reactions. Another publication, as you can see, around 1992 was by Lacour on this so-called Rudolfson paper, N equal to 3 phase. And here is the structure of that compound. I have been working on this compound, on the nickelates themselves and other Rudolfson paper phases for many, many years. And I will describe the structure in a moment. You can see that Lacour actually was able to reduce with hydrogen this particular nickelate into this infinite triple layer nickelate many years ago. Again, he did the structure, nothing about the physical properties. So I just want to remind you what these Rudolfson-Papper phases are, because I won't repeat it again. They have this general formula, Ln plus 1 Ni, N or any transition metal. Actually, there are many transition metals. Titanium structures were the first one determined by Rudolfson and Papper, hence the name. And they can be described better, perhaps, by this formulation, where we have perovskite and perovskite layers separated by rock salt layers in the Rudolfson-Papper phases, where N can be 1, 2, 3. And the first superconducting cuprate, La2CuO4, for example, is one of these N equal to 1 Rudolfson-Papper phases. So here you have the N equal to 3, and we have 3 perovskite layers separated by rock salt layer. And you can have, of course, 2 and 3, and infinity is, of course, the perovskite structure. So this gives you an idea of the interest in the cuprates and the nickelates. The number of articles since 1986 on the nickelates is 81,350 up to 12,209. And of nickelates is around 2016 since 1986. There are experimental articles on Ni plus 1, Ni plus nickelates 7, and there are only 2 structural types. All of these nickel plus 1, nickel 2 plus nickelates are done, as I have shown you, by reduction, so they are all metastable phases. There are multi-step syntheses are involved, and there are very delicate synthetic procedures. So as you can see here, many, many years ago, one of my graduate students got her PhD on studying these nickelates already at the time of the high temperature superconductivity. Obviously, I was trying to make already then a nickelate superconductor, and we were only able to get a small amount of the oxygen out of this N equal to 2 phase. La3Ni2O7 is the host material, and reduction in 10% hydrogen availed us this particular material. We came back to it around 2005 or so when we began looking at this. And what I wanted to do was, actually, I wanted to substitute for some of the oxygen, some hydrogen, and get nickel-hydrogen, nickel super exchange interaction, another interaction that is very rare. At any rate, we determined the structure, and I'm not going to talk about this particular material. The structure is shown here, so here is the N equal to 2 Rudolfson-Papper phase. We remove some of the oxygen, and what's interesting is it is known that in these Rudolfson-Papper phases, when you reduce it, the oxygen that comes out is always, during reduction, is always this interconnecting oxygen. And so we determine the structure, and just like in the cuprates, we have octahedra and we have square pyramidal nickels, and we were able to show that some of the in the square pyramids, nickel 2 plus prefers to stay, and in the distorted octahedra, both nickel plus 1 and nickel plus 2 are found. So, as I mentioned, we came back to these nickelates, and we were looking at the literature, and at that point, Rosinski and company were reducing transition metal oxides by calcium hydride. So we tried that reaction, as you can see, at low temperature, and we were able to remove more oxygen now. And what we expected, we did neutron diffraction structure data analysis, and actually what we expected to see when caution in this reaction, it can lead to explosion. Here is then the n equal to 2 Radolfsson-Papert phase again, La3 Ni2O7, and when we get the composition O6, you expect that all of these oxygens between the octahedra would be removed, and we would be getting square pyramidal coordination of the nickel. But surprise and surprise, what we had was a reorganization of the insulating layers between the nickel infinite layers. So this shows that the oxygen comes out, and the oxygens are reorganized. So in the Radolfsson-Papert phase, we have the perovskite layer and then the rock salt layer, perovskite layers. In the so-called T prime phase, which is found also in the cuprates in Nd2CO4, this is a n equal to 2T type phase, and what we have is now infinite square planar nickelate, infinite layer separated by the fluorite layer, in which the lanthanum is actually in an environment of a cube. We have checked the formal oxidation states in all of these materials by nickel KH X-ray absorption spectra. This measurement actually was done by my colleague Mark Croft, who is one of the best in the world. And what you need is a bunch of standards, and you can see LaNiO3, nickel 3 plus, this n equal to 2 Radolfsson-Papert phase, Ni2.5, this partially reduced n equal to 2 phase, and then our La3 Ni2O6 compound. And you can see the how at some arbitrary value of the absorption coefficient, the oxidation state, the energy marches with the oxidation state. So here we have the lowest oxidation state, higher, and here we come to 3. So the electronic, unfortunately, these phases after the reductions are small particles and are very, because they are prepared at low temperature and decompose at high temperature, they are almost impossible to heat up and to condense into a dense ceramic. We measured the resistivity, and as you can see, log resistivity as a function of T to the minus 1/4 follows Mott variable range hopping. And with Claudia Felser, we have calculated the band structure of this material. And here you can see in the ferromagnetic state, in GGA, which of course doesn't work for these correlated materials, we see metallic behavior. But what I would like to point out is that there is this very dispersive band and fed band that looks just like in the high temperature superconducting cuprates. And when we do the when they did the calculation with LDA plus U, at only U equal to 1.4 electron volt, they introduce a gap in the minority spins, and we achieve a half metallic material. The ground state of this material, as calculated by LDA plus U, is a degenerate antiferromagnetic and ferromagnetic state, and the difference between the two is very minute within the error of the experiment. They have also calculated antiferromagnetic ordering by various calculation methods. You can see that GGA, as I have said, is not applicable for these correlated materials. Actually, the antiferromagnetic GGA is very similar. When we begin to introduce some even small value of U, however, there is a separation of the bands from the Fermi level, and the separation increases as U increases. And with this method, actually, this corresponds, this is in very good agreement with the LDA plus U method at U equal to 3.5 or so. So you can see that this n equal to 2 nicolate is very similar structurally to this La to Ca Cu2O6 cuprate that Kava made superconducting at around 60 K. And so here is the LDA plus U at 7 electron, U equal to 7 electron volt, the band structure calculation. So here is for La3Ni2O6, it's metallic. And here is it for La to Ca Cu2O6, which is isostructural nearly, and you can see that there is a gap opening in this compound. However, the total number of electrons here are 65, and are 66 here. So when we artificially substitute for one of the lanthanum-sized zirconium, which has one more electron, we open up a gap. So now we move on to a higher n value of these nicolates, and as I have shown you... No, we have not been able, I'll show you the problem that I am not able to substitute. I cannot dope this material thus far, okay? That's a big problem. Okay, so moving along, we have then studied higher members of these T-type nicolates. And here is the Rudolfsen-Popper phase. When we react it at low temperature with hydrogen, again, we get the T-type n equal to 3. La4Ni3 reacted with hydrogen gives La4Ni3O8. And here is the structure of this material. So you can see that we have three layers, infinite layers of NiO2. There are nickels, there are lanthanums, and I want you to pay attention. There are two types of lanthanums, two types of nickels. Crystallographically, these outer ones are called nickel 2. The inner one is nickel 1. And there are the lanthanum 2 and the lanthanum 1. The lanthanum 1 is in between these layers. And this becomes important when I talk about some other experiments. We also made the n equal to 4 phase, and I'm not going to talk about extensively about this. This requires a high pressure synthesis. And what I haven't pointed out, but I hope you have looked at, that in every case when we remove the oxygen, the C parameter decreases. And we go from an orthorhombic phase group of the Rudolfsen-Popper phase to a tetragonal phase group in the T prime phase. So all known Ni plus 1, Ni2 plus compound with infinite NiO2 layers belong to this T prime type homologous series, whose formula is shown there. And the question is, how can we control the Ni oxidation state and how can we change it? So one solid state chemist would dope into, substitute into the lanthanum side, so for the La side, we also made the neodymium analogs of all of these compounds, and we find that there is a very limited range of solid solution in the parent phase. And the oxygen stoichiometry, incidentally, appears to be very well defined in these T-prime nicolates. So how can we change the titanium oxidation state by changing N? So you can see that the value of nickel formal oxidation state in the Ruddles-Papert phases is quite high. And in fact, you know, LaNiO3, Ni3+, and Rice and others predicted that we cannot get superconductivity in Ni2+, Ni3+. So that's pretty well accepted. So note that in these T prime phases, we can actually change the oxidation state all the way to 1, as I have shown, by changing N. So there is some hope there. So we measured, here are the interesting physical properties of this N equal to 3 T prime nickelate. And here is the magnetization as a function of temperatures. And what do we see? Before I say anything else, the most striking feature of this measurement is the drop in the magnetization that we begin to see at 1T at around 105K. You also see, however, that we do not see this drop in the magnetization. We do not see this transition, this anomaly, at lower magnetic field. Why don't we? And in every sample, in every batch of the sample, and we have made many batches, we see this transition. But the samples are, all of these samples are field dependent. And finally, we attribute the field dependence. We believe that, of course, that this is a bulk property. And this field dependence is due to a very tiny amount of nickel impurity, which is less than 1%, because we never see any other material except this one in the power X-ray diffraction, in the neutron diffraction. We never see any material. Here is the magnetization, the magnetic moment per nickel at 5K. Is very small, even if we ignore the presence of the nickel. And moreover, we have looked at the transition electron microscopy of this sample, and our sample is not nanometer size, but it's micrometer size. And our collaborators in France, Fontainebleau, has looked at the high-resolution transmission electron microscope image, which shows a beautiful image. This is the area that they have looked at. There are no defects in this material. And usually, one sees in these layered material intergrowth of the N equal to 1 or the perovskite phase, but the material is very pure and free of defects. So next I move on to the resistivity, and you can see the most important feature that I could point out is that, again, the 105K anomaly occurs in the resistivity as well. The temperature dependence of the resistivity is the same at H equal to 0, applied magnetic field at 0, and H equal to 5T. So we believe that the 105K transition also appears in zero magnetic field. So the resistivity appears to be semiconducting behavior much lower below the the resistivity is lower above the transition. 105K. There it is. Oh, you mean what is the nature of the transition? I'm going to talk about that. Is that the question? Okay, so first I present the data, and then you can disagree with me about the interpretation. But here is the, so far you can see that in the magnetization, in the resistivity, and here is the specific heat, which shows a huge entropy change. We calculated the area under this peak by subtracting the specific heat of this related compound, and we find that the experimental entropy is 5.96, which agrees very well with the theoretical entropy, assuming just one nickel plus. Okay, so for an S equal to 1/2, there is good agreement with the entropy. Assuming any other value, for example, S1, for example, the entropy, theoretical, the calculated entropy is much higher. So the experimental entropy is close to R log 2 per nickel plus, or one-third of nickel, right? We have three nickels if the nickels are, if the electrons are itinerant. So Gabby calculated the Fermi surface, and you can see the Fermi surface shows three Fermi surfaces, and particularly this one around the gamma is a square Fermi surface, and it shows nesting. So we have a highly two-dimensional material whose Fermi surface shows nesting, and I have been looking at low-dimensional transition metal compounds, and particularly the molybdenum bronzes, which have, and the phosphate tungsten bronzes, which have many charge-sensitive waves, so I'm familiar with this kind of Fermi surfaces. So we said immediately that perhaps we have charge-sensitive wave transition at 105, that anomaly that we see is due to a charge density wave instability or a spin density wave instability. So here is the neutron diffraction power pattern for this compound, and unfortunately we do not see at 300K and 15K the neutron diffraction patterns are identical. So we do not see any structural transition that one would expect to see if this anomaly was due to a charge density wave. Moreover, we have measured the extended X-ray absorption structure for this compound, and what is plotted here is the mean squared relative displacement of the average NIO distance, and what, as a function of temperature, and what you can see is that there is not very much change, so there is no structural change, I'm almost done, and there is a drop at 105K, again showing the transition at 105K, that there is some enhanced correlation in the NIO at that temperature. So there is no structural transition indicated, so we have to rule out charge density wave transition. And so we left for the anomaly perhaps with spin density wave state. The calculations indicate that the wave vector is one-third, one-third, zero, which leads to a tripling of the A direction. I already said that there are no extra peaks, and there is no static magnetic ordering. This is a problem. However, if the ordering occurs actually in the infinite nickel planes, it may be that there is very poor correlation between the layers, and that could lead to maybe we're not seeing ordering and the absence of the peaks at 15K magnetic peaks that we would be expecting for a spin density wave transition are too broad and we just don't see them. So here is the NMR, the lanthanum NMR spectra of this material and measured by Nick Khoury. And you can see that he identified two lanthanums, LA1 and LA2. And LA1 in the NMR has an EFG of 1.3 megahertz, and we have identified this site as LA1 in the structure because the calculations also indicate a much higher EFG for LA1 than for LA2, which the NMR shows 20 kilohertz, and the calculation shows between 0.4 and 1.65. So you can see that there is a large distribution of hyperfine fields for LA1, not so much for LA2. As we cool the material, so this is the temperature, as we cool the material at low temperature, the LA1 side is so broadened by the distribution of internal fields that its overall intensity is wiped out at low temperature. But the LA2 site, although it's broadened, it remains down to very low temperatures. And he identifies two peaks in attributed to LA2, which develop a temperature dependence. And he plots the temperature dependence here, so the field as a function of temperature, and from this he deduces that the temperature dependence of these two NMR subpeaks shows an internal field of about 200 oersted at the LA2 sites, and this is attributed to transferred this field is due to transfer of magnetization hyperfine field from the ordered nickel moments, and this is very similar to this LA-NMR is analogous to the yttrium NMR in ITCO. So we believe that this is a direct measure of the order parameter in the material. And this shows the relaxation of the NMR spectra, nuclear spin lattice relaxation. The inset simply shows where this spectra was obtained for LA1 and LA2. The blue is LA1, this one is LA2, as indicated here. And so what do we see? What we see is that at high temperature, we have a constant relaxation. For the blue, which is LA1, and I remind you that LA1 is between the nickel infinite planes, and LA2 is in the fluoride planes. So what we see is an increase, a huge divergence for LA1, which incidentally you can count has 8 nearest nickel neighbors, and also the structure indicates that this lanthanum is closer to the nickels than this lanthanum in the fluorite layer. So the lanthanum nickel distances here are longer than here. And so that's why we see this huge divergence, which is an indication of spin fluctuations, which disappears at 105, again indicating the bulk nature of the material. And then as the temperature is lowered, we again have Fermi liquid behavior. So I already have said that. So the NMR is also in agreement with the DFT that only a portion of the density of states at the Fermi level is gapped, as I will show you in a moment. I'll try to do this very quickly. I only have maybe 2 or 3 slides. So these were the initial spin orientations for the paramagnetic case, then the ferromagnetic case, all of the spins up. This is the so-called FM layers. So we have ferromagnetic orientation in the layers, but AFM between the layers. AFM checkerboard with square root of 2A times square root of 2A. And then an AFM SDW for which we have in one NiO2 layer, the different colors indicate independent Ni positions. So for all of these various spin configurations, calculations were made, and this will be, incidentally, this is the band structure that was calculated for the top one is AFM SDW, which I will show you is the ground, we consider it, appears to be the ground state, and it shows partial gapping at the Fermi energy. And this is my final slide, which shows the results of the LDA plus U calculation with U 4.3, which was also determined, derived on the basis of ab initio constraint calculations. So what do we see here? So the AFM-BL FM orientation in the NiO2 layers gives the lowest energy, but it has a very high total magnetic moment. The ferromagnetic is next to lowest energy, but again has a very high magnetic moment per Ni. And you remember I showed you this measurement of the magnetic moment per Ni as a function of the field with very low magnetic moment. So we can rule these out. So let's look at the AFM checkerboard. Is the energy is much higher than for this, although the magnetic moment is all right. But we eliminate this, the AFM checkerboard, and the ground state is more likely the AFM SDW. The energy is much higher here, right, than here. On that basis, we consider this to be the ground state. And these are my conclusions. I think I have demonstrated that we have made a very interesting series of nickelate materials, and we are working very hard to dope them, to make them superconducting, and this N equal to 3 phase appears to have an AFM SDW fluctuation similar to superconducting materials. If you give me just one moment, I would like to emphasize that there are still many unresolved issues about this compound. We are still working on seeing the magnetic reflections, if this 105K anomaly is due to a spin density wave instability. The resistivity data is also in question. It doesn't seem to be a metal. It seems to be semiconducting, but the calculations, in fact, indicate that it's a metal. The specific heat has a problem because we are losing some. It corresponds to a spin equal to 1/2. We cannot dope it so far. And I just heard here at this meeting from Claudia Felser. She has one of our samples. And they went up to 100 gigapascal, the 60 is not quite correct, and they see high correlations and still insulating properties. So thank you for your attention.
One question as to the doping for the triple layer material you showed. So you showed a calculation of a Fermi surface.
Right.
And that Fermi surface looks to me to be doped with a third hole. That's also what you get nominally. If you just count and say all the nickels are equivalent, you get 9 minus 1/3. And that's also the volume of this Fermi
surface.
Right, yes. So that's in this LDA or whatever, simple calculation.
Right.
The question is now, you said that the NMR looks very much like an IPCO. And IPCO you can do for different dopings and so on. So
the LA NMR.
So what do you learn from the NMR about the count? Are the electrons metallic sitting equally on all these planes, or is it such that the inner plane is differently doped than the outer planes, like the Japanese like to say from their NMR experiments, or can you say anything about this?
So I go back to the NMR. Right? So you're asking me about what the NMR shows. This is the LA NMR. Okay, LA1 and LA2, the blue is LA1, the red is LA2, and you can see that at high temperature, right, it's temperature independent. So I am told that when the NMR behaves like this, it's metallic. When we pass this transition, again it becomes temperature independent. Well, yeah.
You have mentioned that oxygen stoichiometry seems to be well defined. Have you measured oxygen content, and if yes, how? If not, do you try annealing in oxygen and high pressure, high temperature,
yes, we have done all
and vacuum, etc.?
Yes, we have done all those experiments. In fact, I showed you the reduction of the Rudolfsen-Popper phase, which is O10 in the case of the N equal to 3, and we can go back and forth. We can reoxygenate and get back the Radolzen-Papert phase at 350 degrees centigrade and from an oxygen tank. So you don't need very high pressures, not extraordinary pressures.
From the early days of this cuprate business, there's been this nagging underlying issue of the conditions under which you can dope a Mott insulator. There are lots of others which are known. Even if you stick to just spin half, two-dimensional, there is strontium-2-vanadium-04, which is a perfectly nice spin half,
right,
two-dimensional Mott insulator and antiferromagnet. There is a titanium compound, very simple one whose name escapes me now.
LiTi-204.
No, there's another one which has got some nitrogen in it. But there are others, and they are impossible to dope.
LiTi-204.
Except for the methods my friend Schoen tried to adopt. Now, the real physics and chemistry question is why not? Because even in the case of cuprates, sometimes it is not possible to dope uniformly. And that's what leads to, stripes and all kinds of horrible discussions. But really, from the point of view of chemists, is it really understood what is it that usually you can dope the cuprates, whereas nickelates always form charge order? Certainly, the strontium-1-8 you cannot dope at all. Even nickel oxide you cannot dope. Is there some understanding of what is it that makes cuprate unique in that regard?
No. That's why I think we cannot predict which materials will be high temperature superconductors.
No, you
have to determine empirically.
It's a somewhat more highly it's a question on a larger energy scale than superconductivity. It should be easier.
Perhaps you theoreticians can determine that when you put the proper doping into this N equal to 3 nickelate, you get a higher energy state, right? And that's why it's not going.
It doesn't even form. That's the worst form. Worst kind of state segregation, right?
And well, it could also be that we haven't found the conditions. The window may be very narrow where we can achieve this substitution. I don't know.
I'm sorry, I had a different question. The bulk cubic perovskite nickelates, lanthanum nickelate and so on, are reported to show some kind of charge order with magnetic effects as sort of like a weak parasite in many of the compounds. Does this kind of charge order occur in your nickelates or not?
No.
It does not occur.
LaNiO3 is nickel 3+. No, we have not seen any charge ordering in this material. It's really a different animal, right? Different electron count, different structure.
Question, what is actually the highest valence of nickel you can reach? Can you come close to one, really, in any material known?
Yeah, in LaNiO2.
And is it magnetic, really?
No measurements have been made on this LaNiO2 because nobody has been able to prepare it pure enough to warrant measurement.
It's not possible to dope it either?
You see, there is always a problem when you make these materials. Well, I haven't tried to dope LA and IO2. We're trying to make it first in a pure enough.
So in comment to Chandra's question and also a question to you, you know, the one big difference between nickel 1 plus like oxide and a copper 2 plus like oxide is that the nickel 1 plus like oxide is not a charge transfer gap like material. I would expect it to be the first, you know, electron removal state would be a nickel electron removal state, and that brings you to immediately nickel 2 plus, which probably digs itself in and or maybe even phase separates, whereas the cuprates are very different. They are charge transfer gap insulators, so this means that the hole, the charge part of the problem, goes mainly onto oxygen. I'm not saying, you know, chemically it looks like low spin nickel 3 plus, but in terms of the charge is mainly on the oxygen. So perhaps that is a necessity, actually, in order to do this doping without having compensation due to color centers and all this kind of stuff, like you have a nickel oxide. You can dope nickel oxide,
sure,
but you know, you always get both removal of oxygen and nickel or something like that. You know, get some other vacancies also. It's actually an interesting point, because maybe you really need charge transfer.
That's an interesting point.
Martin, did you try to put back, they put fluorine into it?
Yes.
And what happened there?
Goes in. I didn't have time to talk about it. I'm a slow talker. I was going to mention it, but then the point that 5 minutes was.
Because yeah, you change the state of the nickel again.
Yeah. So here we actually still working on this, but you know, we got two. There are two phases here, line phases, F1 and F2. You can put in instead of the missing oxygens. Okay, so, but it's not going in the right direction, right? What I want to do is, what I want to have is an Ni plus and dope Ni2 plus into it, right? Like in the cuprate in analogy with the cuprate superconductors. So in the La4 Ni308 F2 phase, I have Ni2 plus. Okay. So. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that it can be done, and we have made measurements on these materials. But we can now make pure LA4 Ni308 F1 and LA4 Ni308 F2.
But in the nickel sites, did you try to put copper also?
Excuse me?
In the nickel sites, did you try to put copper?
No, we have not played around with the nickel site yet.
Because, you know, yes. Going back to Chandra's question, you know,
yeah. Like I mean,
nickel and copper are not going to start.
But I heard about the nictites here, actually, that they become superconducting when you put, I mean, I worked on the blue molybdenum blue bronzes. When you put anything on the octahedral sites, you know, on the conducting material, on the conducting atom, molybdenum kills everything, kills the charge density wave. In the cuprates, I think it also kills, right? When you substitute into the cuprate, it kills. So as a solid state chemist, you know, we don't want to mess around with the planes that are doing all the interesting things. You don't want to substitute into these planes. Right. But what I heard about the nictites here encourages me to maybe try to substitute something into the substitute for the nickel side and see what happens.
Right, but the advantage here, you don't start with a square plane, you start with an octahedral. So you can do the substitution in the mother phase,
yeah.
And then after you can maybe...
Yeah, well, of course, yeah. I mean, I always would start with the Radolfsen-Papper phase and then go, of course.
Okay, I think one last question. simple chemistry question. So did you try to replace lanthanum with, you know, other rare earth element with smaller ionic radius?
Yes, we tried other rare earths. The only one that works is neodymium. So we can make analogs of all of these with neodymium.
Okay, let's thank our speaker once again. Okay, so Jocelyn.